A research team at the University of Queensland have developed a drug with promising potential to minimise the damage caused by heart attacks and strokes by utilising the venom of one of the world's deadliest spiders, the funnel web. Cardiovascular disease are the leading cause of death globally, taking an estimated 17.9 million lives per year, according to the World Health Organisation. Sophie Coghill asked Professor Glenn Smith, group leader at the University of Queensland Institute of Molecular Bioscience, how the research team first discovered the venom's benefits.
We were trying to see whether we could prevent the brain damage after a stroke initially, and there was an ion channel, something on the outside of nerve cells that lets ions in and out, that we thought was really important in the development of the stroke. And so we were trying to find something that would inhibit that channel. And what we did was look in our collection of venoms. We had the largest collection of venoms in the world. And the reason we look at venoms is they're the best natural source of molecules that will modulate the activity of these ion channels. And in looking at that collection, which contains venoms from a variety of different animals from all around the world, it turns out the winning molecule actually came from a local spider, the venom of the gharri funnel web spider just north of Brisbane. And what that molecule does is block the activity of that channel. That channel gets activated in after a stroke, and what it does, unfortunately, is send suicide signals to the nerve cells and causes them to die. And so what our molecule does is block the activity of that ion channel. Suicide signals don't get sent after a stroke, and what we do is spare a lot of those nerve cells after the stroke begins, and so the patient, we hope, has more chance of both surviving and also having a better outcome after the stroke.
So you said initially it was to do with looking at sort of the brain, but now you've found that it's actually really useful for the heart. Can you talk a little bit more about the findings with that?
Yeah, so that was an exciting development. We were initially interested in stroke, and because it worked so effectively, we were able to show that we could still give the drug 8 hours after stroke, which is what we call an ischemic injury, an injury due to lack of oxygen. It worked so well, we began to think, well, maybe this channel is important for other organs that are really susceptible to this kind of ischemic injury. And the organ that's most susceptible to a deprivation of oxygen is the heart. The reason we can only keep a donor heart for about 4 hours before we transplant it, because it starts to die fairly quickly. So very fortunately for me, soon after we made that discovery, Nathan Palpant arrived here as a group leader at the Institute for Molecular Bioscience. And Nathan is a cardiac physiologist. And I said to Nathan, what do we know about this channel in the heart? And he said, we don't even know if it's there. So we embarked on a study to see if it was there. We found it was really important in the context of a heart attack as well, and also in the context of heart transplant. And we're able to show this molecule we discovered from the spider's venom was also very effective in stopping heart and muscle cells dying after a heart attack. So because that's kind of an easier application clinically, that's the first one we're going to go for. We're going to try and see if this molecule will be able to preserve heart tissue after people have a severe heart attack.
When would they be taking this drug, Professor King? What would that look like?
Yeah, that's a really, really important question. It turns out the problem at the moment for stroke in particular is that there are no drugs that will protect the brain after a stroke, none at all. There is one molecule that is used to try and reperfuse the heart or the brain, that is to remove the clot, called TPA. The problem is, if you have a stroke, there are two kinds. There's an ischemic stroke, which is a clot in the brain, for which that molecule would be useful. But there's also a hemorrhagic stroke, which is a bleed in the brain, for which that molecule could actually make things much worse. And so you can't use it for hemorrhagic stroke. And that's a dilemma for the paramedic. The paramedic might find somebody who's had a stroke, but they don't know what kind of stroke it is, so they can't actually do anything. You have to transport that person to the hospital, image their brain, find out what kind of stroke it is, and then the neurologist can make a decision as to whether to use that drug or not. And if the person is in a regional area, for example, and takes many hours to get to the hospital, they're losing 2 million nerve cells per minute during that process of getting transported to the hospital. What we're hoping is our drug can be used by first responders, either in the context of a heart attack or a stroke. So as soon as the patient was found, they could be given some drug, the brain would get protected immediately, and we think that would be really critical to saving as much tissue as possible after the stroke or after the heart attack. So we think that's where we'll have hopefully a profound impact on the management of both stroke and heart attack by enabling first responders to actually deliver something that will be useful to the patient.
Now that the drug has been licensed and with some funding, what are the next steps for you and your team?
The next steps, in the short term, the major issue is making enough of the drug. We turned out the dose we need to get these effects is very tiny, but the patient population is very large. So working out a manufacturing route for this is going to be take some time because it's a very complicated molecule. But nonetheless, the aim is to get this drug into phase one clinical trials for patients that are having a heart attack by the last quarter of 2023, so a little more than 1 year away.
Professor Glenn Smith, Group Leader of the University of Queensland's Institute for Molecular Bioscience, speaking there with Sophie Coghill.